NFL season is inching closer and closer. Who are the contenders and who are the pretenders? We have four downs to figure out your team's future. It's time now for First and Goal on the Zach Gelb Show.
And we welcome in a man that played for the Jets, did spend 10 years in the NFL, and now he is a media star with CBS Sports HQ, also Sirius XM, and that is our pal, Lijay Duzabal. Lijay, how you been?
I'm good, Zach. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fantastic, and I'll tell you, I've been so impressed so far by Aaron Rodgers. Usually, I don't give a rat's ass about preseason or training camps or OTAs, but this guy could do no wrong right now, and he's saying and doing all the right things.
You can say that, Zach. You talk about a guy that there was a lot of question marks going into this offseason after the Jets traded for him, right? Because for the last 3 or so years, he hadn't really showed up to the offseason programs. There was questions about continuity with his young receivers. But then he comes to the Jets, right, Zach? And he's there the entire offseason, building that rapport with Garrett Wilson, right? He already had the rapport with Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb, but making sure he got that rapport with Tyler Conklin and also Garrett Wilson. And then, on top of that, Zach, he did something that I don't think anybody could fathom. He gave back essentially $35 million so the Jets could have cap room to potentially sign other players, whether it's now before the season or right at the trade deadline. So Aaron Rodgers has done an amazing job, and he's also been a really good mentor for Zach Wilson. I'm actually excited to see Zach Wilson play tonight.
And Jet fans right now, as they should be, they're like fat kids in candy stores. They're jumping up and down. They're delirious. They're going nuts. But then you have some Jet fans saying, all right, this organization always tortures you. You see Rodgers, he's saying all the right things now. He took $35 million less. But naturally, Jet fans are like, when does the other shoe just drop here? What do you say to that Jet fan that is still skeptical that something will go wrong here?
Yes. Stop with all that negativity. We don't have time for all that. Let's just put this into perspective. In that 2010 season, right, Aaron Rodgers had a top five defense, Zach. You know what happened at the end of that year? Green Bay won the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers is coming to a situation where he has an elite championship-type defense. So the Jets don't need MVP Aaron Rodgers. Now, would you love that? Of course, right? That's icing on the cake. But if they could just get adequate quarterback play, and last year for Rodgers, to his standards, was a down year. For a lot of quarterbacks in the league, it's still almost a career year. I mean, the guy threw for nearly 3,700 yards and 26 touchdowns. If you look at the history of the Jets' entirety, only two quarterbacks have ever done that in Jets' history. One was my guy, Fitzmagic, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the other guy was Smoking Joe Namath, who won a Super Bowl. So if the Jets just get that Aaron Rodgers last year, Gels, they lost six games within one score. So they could have won 10, 11, 12 games and potentially won the division. So when you talk about a championship defense, you talk about Aaron Rodgers, the four-time MVP, who's highly motivated, who's pissed off a little bit. And then Sean Payton even just kind of threw some fuel on the fire for him recently, talking about his dear friend and offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett. You get a pissed off Aaron Rodgers. The last time we saw that was before the 2020 season. And what did Rodgers go out there and do? 48 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, and won the MVP.
So how are we talking about Aaron Rodgers at the end of the year?
I believe you're talking about a guy, hopefully, that's holding up the Lombardi, but if not, a deep playoff run. And I believe we're talking about a guy that's going to play one more year for sure, if not two more years. There's been talk that he could potentially play 3 years. Now, I think he also said if it's a magical year, who knows what happens, right? Say the Jets do go on and, you know, do what they're supposed to do and then win the big one. I could see him going off into the sunset, and I don't think any Jet fan would be mad about that. But I believe at the end of this year, we'll be saying Aaron Rodgers is getting ready for the next season, 2024, in the Jets uniform.
So you talked about Zach Wilson earlier and how you're excited to see him play tonight. Do you think he still has a future in this league one day as a starting quarterback?
Time will tell, Zach, to be honest, because some of the film that we saw the last 2 years was got awful, if I'm being frank. And it's just the little things, the things that are boring to most people, he struggles with, right? fundamentals in the pocket, footwork, making your top half match your bottom half when going through your reads, right? When there's a little bit of pressure and the pocket crumbles just a little bit, him automatically using his athleticism to get outside the pocket and throw off platform. Those are the things that he struggled with, the simple things, right? Check down passes, getting your feet in the ground and making a check down pass. When that back foot hits in this West Coast offense, throwing it to the receiver and hitting him in stride, right? Those are the things he struggled with. So those are the things I want to see him grow with. And the thing is, Zach, this is like the first year he's actually had a veteran quarterback be like a mentor, a guy that he actually looks up to that he grew up watching, right? And Aaron Rodgers, I've loved what I've seen on film and practice as far as he's been a guy, even through individual periods, right? If Zach Wilson takes a snap and his footwork's off a little bit or he doesn't like what he did mechanic-wise, he goes to him and talks to him right after that play. It's not like he waits a couple plays later. So I believe Zach Wilson has never really had that mentor figure in the locker room before that he really looked up to and listens to, and I believe that will benefit the kid a lot.
Let's get to the next down. Lijay Duzabal here with us. So I'm going to bring up Justin Jefferson for a second. In year one, he had 1,400 yards. Then in year two, had a little over 1,600 yards. And then last year, had a little over 1,800 yards. Last year, with no quarterback, Garrett Wilson had 1,103 yards. So we've seen Justin Jefferson somehow get better. How much better does Garrett Wilson get now having Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, you just stated it, right? I mean, Garrett Wilson, to put this into perspective, Zach, had four different quarterbacks throw him the ball, and he went over 1,100 yards. So you're talking about not having any continuity with your quarterbacks and still going over 1,100 yards your rookie year. Imagine being blessed to have a four-time MVP. I would say before Patrick Mahomes, people would say was the most talented quarterback as far as the skill, from a skill set. One of the most talented quarterbacks we've ever seen grace a gridiron field in Aaron Rodgers, right? And then Aaron Rodgers comes out and says he sees a little bit of Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson, right? So how much better can he be? Go ahead and mark this down. Clip this, Zach. Garrett Wilson will eclipse 1,500 yards this year, and he may eclipse 1,600. I'm telling you that right now. With Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, Garrett Wilson will eclipse 1,500 yards.
Now the big question is just going to be, in the playoff game, does Rodgers get too dependent on Garrett Wilson like he was with Davante Adams a few years ago and then just doesn't hit the layup throw? Because that was a concern in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Remember that game against the Niners.
I think the difference is he has a lot of faith and trust in Alan Lazard, especially in the red zone. If you look at Alan Lazard's red zone numbers, they're astronomical. Like, I believe the last 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, he's had at least 12 touchdowns or maybe even more in the red zone. So he really trusts Alan Lazard in the red zone. So I don't think that that'll be as big as an issue as it was when he was in Green Bay.
Also, with Dalvin Cook, do you think he'll be on in this backfield? Do you think he'll be with the Jets?
Ultimately, I do believe he will, right? It's just about what the Jets are offering them. And I was talking about this earlier this week on CBS. When you're Dalvin Cook and you're a veteran in this game, there's a number that you want to play for. Now, nobody's probably going to reach your number just because that's where the running back market is right now. So if you're going to have to settle for a lesser deal, Zach, why sign now and put your body through training camp? You know what I'm saying? So, like, a lot of these veteran running backs, I'm sure if Leonard Fournette or Ezekiel Elliott wanted to sign for league minimum, they would be on teams already. But they're like, a team is going to call me right before the season. I'll sign a deal, and that way I don't have to have the wear and tear of training camp on my body. And I think that's what Dalvin Cook is doing. I also think he's playing the wait in the game in case somebody goes down and then a team is potentially willing to meet him at his number. I still don't think anybody will meet him at his number. If I'm him, right, I'm supposed to make $10 million. I'm coming off of four straight years where I rushed for over 1,100 yards, four straight Pro Bowls. I want to at least make $8 million, but that's what the market is right now. I don't think teams are willing to pay that this late in camp for a running back. It's always about back by committee. So you're probably looking at a deal between $4 to $6 million with incentives to maybe push it up to $7 million is what he's probably looking at. And if that's the case, he's probably in no rush to sign that when he knows he can sign it right before the season starts.
And I'm not saying that he wouldn't sign with the Jets, but it feels like he's using the Jets to go to Miami and say, guys, I'm about to sign with an AFC East rival, team that's been the talk of it. I want to go home. You guys got to up your offer. That's the way that I looked at that tour that he went on at the Jets training camp last week.
Yeah, it's all about a buffer, right? He's trying to get each team, and it seems like he's really honed in on the AFC East, right? Because there was rumors that the Patriots were in on him. Supposedly Buffalo Bills were in on him.
Bill ain't giving you the money, Dalvin, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. We know the Miami Dolphins and Jets are definitely in on him, right? So it's all about trying to raise your stock, right? How high can you get it to make a team come up a little bit more to where you're at? To me, the Miami Dolphins just never made sense. Yes, it makes sense if he wants to sign there for $3 million, but is he going to be willing to do that? I mean, if you look at their running back situation, Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert combined for 1,500 yards last year. Like, why would you pay one running back $7, $8 million? You can get both of those guys for about $3.5-4 million apiece and have that same combination get 1,500 yards for you. And plus, they took Devon Achane high in the draft, who was a home run threat as well in the backfield. So the Miami Dolphins thing just never made sense to me. I don't think Miami and Chris Greer are going to really change their offer if there is one out there. Again, if he wanted to sign for like $3 million, I guarantee that they would have signed him up already, but I don't believe Dalvin Cook wants to play for that.
Let's get to the next down. Lijay Duzabal here with us. So as I brought up Justin Jefferson, I'll now bring up the Washington Commanders. A few years ago, they had a dominant defense, and then last year their defense came back down to earth. So people look at the Jets, they go, oh, they have a great defense. Maybe they'll come back down to earth, but there's a difference here. The Jets ended up getting a quarterback. The Commanders didn't. Is there any concern with this Jets defense out of the year? Because I look across the board, they're loaded heading into this season.
Yeah, I think Joe Douglas has done a really good job. And I would just say this about the Commander situation. I mean, when you lose, you know, Chase Young early in the season, Jonathan Allen was hurt too on that team. I think people tend to forget that. They were in flux at the cornerback position because William Jackson didn't really work out for them. Fuller on the other side has been really good. But that's why they went and got Emmanuel Forbes this year in the draft. So I believe the Commander's defense will bounce back. But going back to the Jets, right, they literally retained almost everybody. Now, they did lose some depth in the interior defensive line group, but I thought they did a really good job of kind of replacing some of those pieces. I think Quentin Jefferson is going to be a really good defensive tackle who has the ability to get after the quarterback from the inside as well. Now, they did lose Nathan Shepard, and then my guy Sheldon Rankins went to the Houston Texans. But other than that, the Jets literally brought everybody back except for Quan Alexander, which Jamien Sherwood, and Quan is a hell of a player, but I think Jamien Sherwood is ready in his third year to take that step to prove that he can be a guy that can be out there with, you know, C.J. Mosley and also Quincy Williams, because he's a guy for the last 3 years. He's always had to been the third guy, the fourth linebacker that had to learn all the positions, right? But now he's kind of settled in on that Sam position, but he's still backing up C.J. Mosley just in case he goes down. Talking to C.J. Mosley, Jamien Sherwood was one of the brightest dudes on that defense, right? So I think it's coming together from him. The issue that he's had is he hasn't been able to stay healthy, right? So I believe last year he would actually had an opportunity to play, but he got nicked up like he did his rookie year. So this will be a big year three for him. And the coaching staff has a lot of faith and trust in him. But I think they've actually elevated at the safety position. I mean, Tony Adams is a guy that people are starting to bring buzz about, but he was playing really well for them at the back end of last year, even though he's an undrafted free agent. I think another year in the system for Jordan Whitehead, we'll see him return to who he was with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And I love the late signing of Adrian Amos. He's just been a consistently good safety in this league. We know what they got at the cornerback position, probably the best trio of corners when you look at Michael Carter, the second in that slot position. He just does not get enough respect for what he does, play in and play out. Sauce Gardner, you know, for all intents and purposes, was voted the number one corner in football by the players this year, and it was an all-pro last year. DJ Reed played at a Pro Bowl level last year. He doesn't get the respect and accolades he deserves. But this defense, man, you're talking about the deepest, one of the deepest defensive lines in all of football. They're going to come at you in waves. And now that they got their star defensive tackle, Quentin Williams, under contract, that's nothing they have to worry about going through the season. I think this defense is going to be locked in. And with Aaron Rodgers on the other side, they can be even better, because now you're thinking about this, Zach, right? They're going to be fresher towards the end of the game because the offense is going to have sustained drives, right? So in the fourth quarter, if it's tight or they're up, they're going to be able to send that D-line at you in waves.
Do you trust the head football coach in Robert Saleh?
I do. I think first and foremost, Zach, you have to be a leader of men. And Robert Saleh is a great leader of men. Like, people and players quickly can tell if you're authentic or not. And the guy that you guys see on camera, the guy that's running up and down those stadiums, the guy with the energy on the top, that's truly who he is day in and day out, right? He holds his players accountable, but he also has he always has their back too, Zach. And that's the thing that really separates him from a lot of guys in this league. Like, he wants all his players to get paid. Like, he loves when his players get paid. And that's why you see so many players speaking highly of him, and they'll run through a brick wall for him because they love the guy he is and how authentic he is.
Let's get to the final down. On the way out with Leje Douzebal. So, I like this Jets team heading into the year. How could you not like Rodgers? You take a look at the wide receivers. They clearly have enough. Defensively, we just all talked about it. The one concern I have is the offensive line. What's your evaluation of this O-line headed into this season?
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room, right, Zach? Can this offensive line stay healthy? I know a lot of Jet fans were mad at Joe Douglas last year, but it's like, what can he do? He literally, his top four offensive tackles all got hurt last year, starting with Mekhi Becton last year. Then George Fant gets hurt, and then also Dwayne Brown gets hurt before the season starts. And Max Mitchell, a guy that wasn't even supposed to play, played really well. And then he had a medical issue, and he had to be out. So, I mean, he did what he could do as far as throwing bodies at that offensive tackle position. I like where we're at in the interior offensive line. Now, there is a battle at center right now. I know the Tippmann kid that they drafted supposedly is not even in that race, right? It's Connor McGovern and then the Western kid that they brought in via free agency. Supposedly those two are in a nice battle for the center position. I believe Connor McGovern will ultimately win that battle. But I think Lincoln Tomlinson bounces back and has a good year. And AVT, to me, was the focal point of that offensive line until he got hurt. I mean, you're talking about a guy in year two, Zach, that could start at both guard positions. And then when they needed him, when all that tackle injuries happened, they sent him out to left tackle versus Denver Broncos. He didn't give up a pressure that game and dominated until he got hurt. So him coming back, I believe he's an all-pro type guard. Him coming back and playing right guard, now it's just the tackle positions. Who will it be, right? Will it be Mekhi Becton or Dwayne Brown at left tackle? Because it seems like Max Mitchell kind of has a stronghold on that right tackle position. Again, he played really well last year. Going into his second year, you would think he elevates his game. And from what I heard from camp, he's been the one tackle that hasn't been getting beat, really, when everybody else has.
Last thing I'll ask you, and I will agree on this, I'm sure of it. My Patriots are fourth in this division. 1, 2, and 3, though. How do you rank the Bills, Dolphins, and the Jets?
It's tough, man. I think they're all kind of neck and neck. I know you call me a homer. I just think with the addition to Aaron Rodgers, if you look at the defenses on those other two teams, the Bills and also the Miami Dolphins, you would have to say the Jets have a better defense, right? And they retain most of their players from last year. I would say Jets, one, because, one, they're not scared of the Buffalo Bills. I know people were like, how are you going to pick them over the Bills? The Bills have won the division so many years in a row. Let's not forget, the Jets beat the Bills in MetLife with Zach Wilson last year. They would have beat them up there in Buffalo if Mike White didn't get killed. And even though he was getting killed, Zach, they were still about to win the game until Michael Carter fumbled that ball late in the fourth quarter. So they still had an opportunity to beat them, even though Mike White was getting beat to a pulp because of that offensive line. If you look at the Miami Dolphins, they're, to me, the scariest team in the AFC East, if I'm being honest with you, Zach. Based on if Tua can stay healthy. Right, they are the most explosive offense in football. Anytime you have a 4x100-meter relay team on your offense, it's scary for defensive coordinators. Trying to track Tyreek Hill, trying to track Jalen Waddle. Raheem Mostert can run extremely fast. Devon Achane can run extremely fast. And let's not forget, Chosen Anderson is there now. Robbie Anderson, that guy can fly as well, too. So, like, you're talking about just straight speed that puts fear in defensive coordinators. That's what the Dolphins have. And then on defense, they brought in the guru to fix that defense. Vic Fangio, they did take a big loss with Jalen Ramsey probably being out till December. But I've heard that second-round pick Cam Smith, who a lot of people had a first-round grade on, has played really well, and he's been given the first opportunity to potentially start opposite of Xavier Howard. They said Xavier Howard is back to his old self. I believe he's already got 3 picks already through training camp. He's looked really good bouncing back from them hamstring injuries he had last year.
So you're going Jets 1, Dolphins 2, Bills 3? That's what it sounds like?
I think that's where I'm going. I know people will kind of look at me crazy. And Gabs, you can speak to this because you've been in the industry for a while. Usually a team has a window of 3, maybe 4 years you can stretch it unless you got Patrick Mahomes. And maybe you can throw Joe Burrow in that category at quarterback, right? I just feel the Bills have missed their opportunity. We saw once Von Miller went down last year, they weren't able to affect the quarterback. Now, they did bring in Leonard Floyd, which I thought was a major signing, but it looks like Von could maybe not be ready for the season. It'll be interesting to see if he stays on PUP or do they bring him off PUP before the season just in case he's ready by, like, week 3. That'll be something interesting because Von's my guy. He's not a human being, but Father Time is undefeated. And coming off of ACL in your mid-30s, that's a tough feat no matter who you are.
Yeah, the way I look at the AFC East, if you tell me the Bills win the division, clearly wouldn't be shocked. Dolphins, Jets, none of those teams would shock me. But usually when everyone says one thing, the opposite happens, and everyone's already assuming that Tua Tagovailoa is going to get hurt at some point. So I ended up saying that Tua's going
to
be healthy.
I'm like, how y'all just already assuming he's going to get hurt?
I think the Dolphins are going to win the division. That was my pick. But
I'm not arguing with you on that, Zach. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, and it's almost impossible to differentiate those three teams. Anyway, Lijay Thusabal, always a kick-ass job. CBS Sports HQ, Sirius XM, you see him everywhere talking football. We appreciate it, my friend.
Appreciate it, Zach.
There you go, Lijay Thusabal with us. We'll take a break. We'll react to a little bit more of the AFC East when the Zach Gelb Show continues in 5 minutes.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Is this just an instrumental, Hickey? That's disappointing. I always love this song. I feel like you could sing this song really well, Hickey. When you get a few drinks in your system at the bar, doing a little karaoke, I could see you going a little Dua Lipa here.
Dua Lipa's great. I love summer music. I don't know about levitating in terms of belting out at the bar, but...
Yeah. Definitely. By the way, I saw the worst karaoke ever. Did you see a video of a CBS Sports Radio employee surface the internet? In the last, must have been 24, 48 hours.
What? No.
Kevin Wall.
Oh.
Huh. Kevin Wall, I think he's singing a Bon Jovi song, if memory serves me right here. I forget what the actual song was. Bon Jovi's on the mind because that's what they brought me in today when I was on with Hockman and Crowder. So maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's not a Bon Jovi song, but it's not a big deal. But Kevin Wall is in a bar. I guess it's some karaoke night. And there's a lot of older people in the bar. Like, this looks like it's 60-plus in the bar. And Kevin Wall is singing karaoke, and there must be no more than 10 people in the bar. And it's not a lot of people. And Kevin Wall, Hickey, is reacting and singing as if he was Taylor Swift on this Eras tour, and there was 100,000 people in this bar where he's trying to hype up the crowd. He's putting the mic in people's face to sing, and there's just no, like, people in the bar. It makes no, and he posted it as if he was proud of it, where I love karaoke. I'm down for a good time at a bar and singing karaoke, but I wouldn't pretend as if there was even 200 people at the bar when there was about 10 people at the bar, and I think maybe 2 people were actually paying attention. It was cringeworthy. It really was.
The song was "Who Says You Can't Go Home?"
Yeah,
by Bon Jovi.
Who says you can't go home? It's a good song.
Good song. Probably maybe not number one on the
not a great karaoke song
depth chart list. That is for sure. But hey, nonetheless, I appreciate. You know, I'll give Kevin Wall this credit. Number one,
good effort, but he sucked.
Good effort, and he didn't care how many people were in the room. He was
that's
singing.
What I'm saying.
Like, there was a million people there, and he put on a show. So even though there's only, like, 3 or 4 people, probably everyone 40 years older than him, in that bar, he gave his heart, and he put everything he had to the song. I respect that.
But you can't post that. Like, for example, I'm okay in the moment at the bar, you're trying to get the people going. But when I'm watching that, and you see that there is maybe 8 people at most in that bar, and they weren't really interested other than that old guy in the corner... You can't post that just to say, oh, look at me singing and getting the bar going. There was no one there to get going.
I don't have too much of a problem with it. I, you know what? I like that he is confident in himself, and he knew he was going to get some laughs, and he said, you know what? I don't care. I thought I killed it. Take a listen.
And another guy at CBS Sports Radio is annoying me.
Uh-oh.
Peter Schwartz. So Peter Schwartz, who barged into our studios to do the update on Monday and demanded for me to bring up that Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti got him tickets to the game, and they got him a T-shirt and a jersey as well. And the reason why I didn't tell Peter no is because then Peter would have asked me for the rest of the show and also for the rest of time why he wouldn't let me get on the air and thank Boomer and Gio. So I kind of just sucked it up, and I knew that we were 2 minutes from going to the update and let Peter talk. But Peter Schwartz now going to Canton, Ohio. He's going to take a picture with any person that has some background in the NFL. And I happen to know this person. She does a great job. She was the first ever female scout, Connie Carberg. But do I really need a photo of Peter and Connie running into each other and Peter Schwartz tweeting out, great to see Connie at the Pro Football Hall of Fame game, hashtag take flight, hashtag Schwartz on sports. Any person that runs into Peter Schwartz this weekend, he's going to use that same caption, just swap out the name, and we're going to have to see this all throughout the weekend.
And you're talking about the same guy who is also in the stadium 2 hours before the game starts.
Great point. The
first preseason game of the year.
Great point.
Where you could literally walk in, I'm sure, 3 minutes before kickoff, and get into your seat no problem and be there for it. He is there 2 hours, maybe scouting out practice, warm-ups. I'm sure. You know him. Looking for Aaron Rodgers on the sideline, trying to walk down there, maybe get an autograph, picture, jersey,
now, two
invite
things,
to the house.
Two things on this one. Well, I don't care how much ayahuasca does. There's not enough ayahuasca to go around for Aaron Rodgers to hang out with Peter Schwartz. So Peter Schwartz has a bag, one of those clear bags that they make you bring in. And there is not an inch of space in that bag. So I wonder how much he actually paid for things that are in that bag, because that dude takes free things without any shame. But then the lady that he's with, Connie, who's the first ever female scout, she has a clear bag, Hickey, and she has a lot of dollars in this bag. Peter Schwartz probably said to her, hey, can we take a picture and can I get like $100? There's got to be $100 bill in there. Have you seen this photo at all?
Oh, I see. I'm trying to see. That might be a 10 or a hundo. Connie, good.
There's
for
a
her.
Lot of money. Look at Connie.
Wow.
How about that? So what do
What's
you notice about
game?
What do you notice about Peter Schwartz's attire in this? Describe his attire right now.
He is in a green New York Jets shirt,
mm-hmm.
a matching green New York Jets hat.
Yep.
Looks to be black cargo shorts, white socks, white sneaks.
So you would assume that it's hot out, right? It's the summer, you're in Canton, Ohio, and based off Peter Schwartz's clothing, it looks pretty hot, right?
Connie is in a t-shirt and looks like a skirt, so she's also dressed for the summer. So yes, I would assume probably 80 degrees, you know, classic summer in Ohio.
So I just sent you a video, and the video is of Chris Sims. This is on NBC with a report on Deshaun Watson. So I'm going to play this for you. And you're going to hear Chris Sims, but you can't see Chris Sims. Hickey, as you play the audio for the listening audience, just look at the video and tell me if you notice anything with some of the B-roll that they are using, knowing that Peter Schwartz is there taking photos with everyone, and he has no shame whatsoever, and Peter Schwartz is out and about in the hot weather. Play the audio, and then you go back and watch the video.
They believe in Deshaun Watson. And thing I was told multiple times is don't look at last year. The man has knocked the rust off, and you're going to see the old Deshaun Watson that we used to see before he had some issues.
Some issues. There were a lot of issues there. No doubt about that. And Chris Sims sounds super duper reportery, sports guy reporter. And now I'm on the sideline, and while I'm on the sideline, I look at Deshaun Watson, and I am being told that Deshaun Watson has knocked off the rust. Ignore the crappy play that you saw last year, but I am Chris Sims, and Deshaun Watson had some issues, and he has knocked off the rust. So, we play you that audio. We could talk about the Browns, right? Is Deshaun Watson going to lead them to the playoffs this year? You look at the Jets in this game. Are they going to get to a Super Bowl? But when you went back and watched that video, Hickey, did you notice anything interesting with the B-roll, knowing that it is hot, Peter Schwartz is there, sweating his ass off, in an 82, 85 degree day summer in Canton, Ohio.
I'm assuming you're referencing Deshaun Watson wearing a winter hat
when
he's talking to Aaron Rodgers before the game.
Now, I'm just someone that is fair. I am a man that believes if you say one thing about somebody else and there's a similar infraction, you should say the same thing about somebody else. You are notoriously known, Hot Take Hickey, for shredding and ripping Tony Gonzalez when it was back to like week three or week four of Amazon Prime when he was on the broadcast desk. I think when they were in, wasn't it Cleveland where they were at? I'm pretty sure it was for a Browns game.
I believe
game.
So.
And he was wearing a scarf and gloves. You crushed him. And you said, he's not a tough guy. And I said, you wouldn't say that to his face. And he would absolutely kick your ass. Why is Deshaun Watson wearing a winter hat in an 85 degree early evening in Canton, Ohio? I don't get that one.
My only explanation is what the kids call these days fashion. Fashion statement.
Okay.
For example, last week, Dalvin Cook was in the New York City area, right, visiting the Jets.
Yeah.
And when he was doing his million media tour hits on that Friday, he was wearing, for CBS Sports HQ, no shirt, winter hat. And so I've officially given up on fashion and what it means and what it's supposed to look like, but that was the look there, Dex.
So you could go one or two ways here. Road one, you apologize to Tony Gonzalez and you say he was just making a fashion statement. Do you take that road, or do you want to travel down the other road?
I do not.
So you want what is behind door B? Road
I'll take
B
door
here.
B.
Well, now you got to be out on the Cleveland Browns. You crushed Tony Gonzalez. You've been one of the biggest proponents for Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns this year. If you can't trust what he's going to wear, and you crushed Tony Gonzalez, and you said, oh, he's not a tough guy for wearing gloves back on the Amazon Prime broadcast, well, doesn't this make Deshaun Watson not a tough guy if he's wearing a winter hat? I think you need to get off the Cleveland Brown train here.
I actually disagree. I think it's the other way around. He's doubly tough.
Spin zone.
Because
spin
he is wearing a winter hat and making it more uncomfortable for him than not. It's like if you go into the sauna and all of a sudden you're going to wear a sweatshirt in the sauna. Anyone
fraud.
Can just go into the sauna wearing no shirt and just absorbing the heat. It's 81 degrees. And you know what he's saying?
Fraud.
I'm a tough guy.
Fraud.
I'm so tough. I'll make myself uncomfortable, but I'll make myself hotter.
Okay.
When everyone else is trying to make themselves cooler, I'll go for the punishment now because I know at the end of the year, I'm going to be needing to stay strong. And this little training in the pregame activities before the first preseason game at the Hall of Fame game is going to make me stronger in January for the playoffs.
Let me tell you, I am so embarrassed to associate with you and have you as the executive producer of this show because you just so unfairly crushed Tony Gonzalez. And now just because you like the Browns this year and you think Deshaun Watson's going to have a big year, you're not willing to just lay into him here.
How is
for
he
wearing
soft?
This winter
it's 85
hat.
Degrees.
Too
He's hot.
Hot. So what was wrong with Tony Gonzalez? Maybe
it was,
maybe
it was, degrees, a war- he was cold.
Maybe it was just he thought it was a warm night and he wanted to make a fashion statement like you're saying.
He has electric gloves. That's not a fashion statement. Guy played in Kansas City for a decade. He is used to the cold. I don't want to hear from Tony.
Okay. Well,
great player, soft hands.
I better not see you in a long sleeve t-shirt until November. Because over the weekend, if we're being fair here, you were at the beach on an 85 degree weekend, and I saw a photo of you and your girlfriend, and your girlfriend's wearing a sweatshirt, and you were wearing a long sleeve shirt. So I thought that I was going to call you out for that, and then I said, you know, I'll pass. Now I'll call you out for it. How the heck were you wearing a long sleeve t-shirt after what you said about Tony Gonzalez?
Fashion.
This year?
It's called fashion.
Stop.
Look it up. I'm just wearing a long sleeve t-shirt to the
fashion.
Beach.
No.
Got to hide from the sun.
You were afraid of the wind, and how do I know that? Because I asked you. Yesterday,
afraid
and you're like,
of the
oh,
no,
you're like,
not.
It gets a little chilly at night in the summer. I gotta wear a long sleeve t-shirt. Please.
That's totally false. I was actually very warm.
You just heard Hickey explain
I
why
went to
he's
the water on the beach on Sunday. I was
you
in the
just
ocean.
Heard Hickey explain why he's a fraud. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I want to play you this audio from the Adam Gold Show. He was talking to UNC Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham as there's a lot going on in the ACC where Florida State this entire week has been complaining about the ACC. They want more money. They want a bigger piece of the pie. And pretty much the feeling is Florida State wants to leave, but there's a lot of restrictions on Florida State because they'd have to pay $120 million to leave. And also, they don't have their own TV rights. They don't get their TV rights until 2036 with this latest agreement. So let's listen up to Bubba Cunningham, the AD at UNC, respond to all the messages that we're hearing from the Seminole Nation this past week.
What they want to do and how they want to go about doing their business, that is their business, but it does have an impact on us. And quite frankly, I don't think it's good for our league for them to be out there barking like that. And I'd rather see them, you know, be a good member of the league and support the league. And if they have to make a decision, then so be it. Pay for the grant or pay for the exit fee. Wait for your grant of rights that you've given. And then when in 2036, when those rights return to you, do whatever you want.
So there's two different types of divorce. One is a messy, contentious divorce, and the other is both parties understand it's time to move on, and you go amicably. Florida State is trying to make this messy because it drives Florida State crazy right now that they're still in the ACC, and you know they want to go to the SEC. And it's going to cost them $120 million to leave, and also they don't have the TV rights until 2036. So they are so frustrated. You know what Florida State is right now? They are the kid that goes to the grocery store with their parents. And the parents are putting apples, oranges, spinach, blueberries, strawberries in the shopping cart. And every time the child goes and tries to get some cookies or some ice cream, something fattening, something sweet, the parent says, "Honey, go put that back on the shelf." And instead of just putting it back on the shelf, the kid is causing a scene, and Florida State is causing a scene and is throwing the ice cream all over the place, throwing the cookies all over the place, and being a brat and crying and having a temper tantrum. And that's what Florida State is doing right now because they know they want to leave. They know they want more money if they were to stay in the ACC, but the parent is not going to meet the needs of the child, and that can be frustrating. We've all been there, but there's two ways to try to divorce. There are two ways to try to get your way, and Florida State right now is clearly taking the approach of we're going to drag the ACC here. We're going to try to be a headache. We're going to have all these claims to show our importance, but ultimately, I don't think they're going to get their way unless they want to ante up here and they want to pay the $120 million to leave and also try to figure out how they're going to negotiate on these TV rights that the ACC has control of until 2036. Hickey, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, they can, again, it's a little frustrating because I get where they're coming from. Like, the gap is massive. And the fact that Indiana football or Vanderbilt football is going to be making $30 million a year more than them, I get why they're infuriated and want to kind of rattle some cages in order to bring attention to that ridiculousness. With that said, again, unless they want to pay basically, I don't know, north of $500 million right now and pay it up front to go leave and go to, you know, the SEC or the Big Ten, nothing's going to change. And it's their fault for kind of signing the deal when they did. And unfortunately for them, got to live with the consequences.
And that's why I use the analogy of the kid in the supermarket, because the kid in the supermarket absolutely should get the cookies. Absolutely should get his way with the ice cream. But if mom and dad say, that's not what you're eating, guess what? They're not going to buy that, and you're not going to be able to eat that. So Florida State should be frustrated. I get that. But I don't think it does any good right now to voice that frustration, because it's not as if the ACC is going to be more willing to work with them in order to give them their way when they're slamming pretty much the conference and saying, outside of two other schools, like, we're the only school that matters.
And I think part of what they're trying to do is, you know, scrounge up another seven schools and try to dissolve the ACC. That's their only bet right now. If eight schools in the ACC say, you know what, we want to leave and we're going to leave right now, and the conference folds, and guess what? You don't got to pay any exit fee because the ACC no longer exists. I think that's another hope that they have, in the sense that they're going to make some noise, and they hope that seven other schools are inspired to where a majority of the 14 ACC schools went out, and they can leave for free, which, again, sure, maybe for Florida State it makes sense. Clemson, it makes sense to leave.
Miami.
Miami, North Carolina. Otherwise, if you're Pitt, if you're Duke, if you're Boston College, and you want to leave the ACC, where are you going that you're going to get more money in that respective conference than you are right now? The answer is nowhere. And that's why for them, they makes a lot of sense for them to stand pat and hope the ACC, or continue to have the ACC, I should say, exist.
And you're not just going to go to the Big 12. You're only going to make the move if you're an ACC school, if it's the SEC or if it's the Big 10 that comes calling. And that's why I said this yesterday, and I still think this is true. The biggest misconception right now is everyone thinks all these schools are just going to flock to the SEC and the Big 10. Well, it takes two to tango. The Big 10 and the SEC is going to want you. They're going to need you in order for that to happen. And they don't need you. Maybe some schools like Clemson, sure. Florida State, sure. Miami, sure. But all these other schools, they're going to just be left out. And they're going to be sitting in their same conference or merging together.